Hello and welcome to Burkett Wonderland, a final World Cup podcast. With me tonight, I have only the Crabmeister. Happy birthday, John!
Thanks, Danny. A couple of days late, but thank you very much.
I take it you didn't hear the podcast we did the other day, did you?
Yes, I did. I heard. I got a message from Lana, actually, saying, are you really 51? Which was quite funny. I was like, if I look like this when I'm 51, I'll be very happy. So, yeah, thank you for the messages.
Oh, good. Did you get anything nice for your birthday?
No, I didn't get any socks or pants, so I was quite disappointed, to be honest. Yeah. I'm at that age now, well, that's the best thing you can get.
Don't tell the ladies how old you are, they'll all get jealous. next up in my lineup, we have Lord Hillwood. Steve, is it sunny or is it cold Poland today, Steve?
It's sunny. I swear, I've just pulled the curtain back because I've had it shut all day because it's been about 28 degrees in 95% humidity. So thunderstorm to thunderstorm, basically. Very unpleasant.
We have not had a single drop of rain in Godmanchester for nearly 7 weeks. It looks, someone did an air, because if you go to Google put in Godmanchester Chinese Bridge, I don't know why it's called a Chinese Bridge, it's been there for about 200 years, and then it takes you over to Port Home, which is like a massive flood area. That looks like you're in the Middle East somewhere, where it's just sand everywhere. It doesn't even look like grass anymore. For miles in every direction, it's just orange, yellowy orange colour.
I'm not going to do what you just suggested that we do, by the way. That's too much work.
Well, if you ever bloody come over it, in fact, 66% of the people there are meant to come and see me. Well, they never did. John only lives half hour away. Let yourself down, John.
Yeah, I can't do it. We're here to talk about football anyway. I can hear Jace, who's already having a go at me.
Get on with your bastards. And finally, in sunny US of A, the host of World Cup 2026, when hopefully England won't qualify and we'll all be supporting Canada. It's Mike in the USA from Gooners in the USA podcast. Good night, Mike.
Cheers. Thanks for having me on. It is sunny and hot here as well. We're having real Poland weather here the last couple of weeks, apparently.
You're in Washington, aren't you?
Is YouTube working okay?
Yeah. Oh, people, Steve's got shitty internet because everybody around where he lives is sponging off of his Wi-Fi. You might need to invest in an Ethernet cable, Steve. Otherwise, you're...
I've got one. I'm going to have to move the laptop, though.
Oh, no, don't do it
just,
now. I don't have to do it now.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to the last couple of weeks of internet working before we start getting the leftover Russian bandwidth that we've apparently just turned ourselves over to. So. Enjoying my last few days of freedom.
Lovely. Right, we should go and do the customary thing and go and have a look in the chat box and see who is in there. I was talking to Michael when it first started. Thunder Road is there. He's talking about my planning a day and an ABW day out. Yeah, I might be going to some games this season. It's going to cost me £400 to stick the child on the insurance for my van, and then we'll be honking down there because she doesn't know how to go slowly. Christian Andresen. There's also Viking Daniel Kupka. Hrvože, 85. He's 85. Is that the year he was born? Bok Hrvože, how are you? He's our Croatian mate that has been on for two of the other World Cup pods. Mm-hmm. We almost didn't do this one because I thought, I can't be bothered. But I thought, we might as well finish it off. Who else is in there? There is Alan Cracker, Joshua Page, who I've been having a chat with on Twitter today. I think he might have sent me some memes, Ornstein memes, which I'm collecting. Kilo Dogs, asking questions already. There's Mike there. He's not called Mike, but he said he can call us that. C Law is there. Archie, Arsenic Gunner in case. Peter Colson, who I've just found out who that person is on Twitter. And they always ask very good questions. It's up to them whether you put your Twitter handle in there. If you want to, you can. Kevin Labeck. When I listen back to this and edit, I edit out myself saying all the time. So I'm going to try not to do it. Chris Lodato. I'll just breathe loudly instead. Bradley Tucker. And I think that's it. Oh, Petito's there. Hello, mate. I did think about getting you on for this, but then... Wasn't sure the times and whether you wanted to do it or not. But Petito is going to be on one of the transfer deadline day pods, definitely. Yes, we're going to have loads of people on those ones, maybe three or four per show and doing four or five shows per day. Right, on to the World Cup. Mike, as you're our guest, what was your thoughts on the World Cup in general, not no specific games?
I mean, to me, this World Cup, I know the most recent one is usually the one you think the most about, but... three World Cups for me stick out in my memory. 1990, probably the first one I really watched from beginning to end, and I was over in your neck of the woods when that happened, so it was pretty exciting. 2002, just because every game was on in the middle of the night. I changed my sleeping schedule around to watch games at 2 a.m., 5 a.m., 8 a.m. And this one, just from beginning to end, the football, the level of the football to me was the top of any World Cup that I can remember. I mean, the excitement level, the games went off without a hitch. The coverage over here sucked, but we tried to ignore that as much as possible.
Was it Alexi Lalas fest?
Too much Alexi Lalas, not enough Ian Wright, and the worst possible play-by-play announcers you can imagine. So I wasn't excited about that. But, I mean, this is just, to me, it was excitement. I thought it ended well. We'll talk, I'm sure, about the England support one way or the other, because I know you and I don't exactly agree on the whole England versus Spurs thing. But I did enjoy the run while it lasted. I think it'll be hard to top this one. The Qatar thing is going to be a fiasco. So maybe in 2026 we can have another good one.
Steve, talking about, Mike just mentioned the Qatar thing. It's going to run from the middle of November. No, it's going to be the end of November until the end of December, isn't it? In fact, I can't remember it. But either way, I worked out they're going to need a month off before the World Cup starts. They're going to need a month off after the World Cup. So there's going to be 3 months of Premier League football ruined, because the Premier League had more players at the World Cup of 126 than any other country and any other league. Not the Premier League. I think there was 126 from England. So what's going to happen with that?
Well, it's quite interesting, isn't it? Because one of the big issues that's not been discussed yet by anybody, all the media all over the world have just presumed that every federation is going to want to go and want to qualify. I also think there's going to be a big problem with the big European and big South American clubs. I think they are going to turn around and say, well, hold on a minute, these are our employees. We're paying these guys fucking fortunes. Actually, we're not really sure we want these guys out there in 35 or 40 degrees heat playing football.
Hold on. Mm-hmm. I did a tweet the other day. Well, I got the information from somewhere else. I put World Cup Qatar will take place between November the 21st and December the 18th, 2022. They will need to join up with their national teams maybe a month before for friendlies and don't come back until 3 weeks after. Does this mean the Premiership shuts on the 1st of November and then reopens on about the 8th of January? And then will 2022-23 season end in late July, and then the next season after that, what's that going to do? Start in August. So there you go. That's the bit I tweeted.
Well, I mean, the big thing here is that obviously if the FA had any sense, they'd move the season so that it started way earlier and it ended earlier. The other thing is that it still comes back to what I was saying. The big clubs are paying, you know, players £300,000, £400,000, £500,000, £600,000 a week. What are FIFA going to do if they all turn around and say we're not releasing our players? You know, that's a big issue. And what do you do with the Champions League? What do you do with all the domestic cups and the leagues? Because basically, for all those clubs in big leagues outside the top six teams, what are they supposed to do? They're going to have no income while that World Cup's going on. Because, you know, like, for example, in La Liga, Real Madrid, Valencia, Barcelona, and probably one other team contribute to the national side. Everybody else, will they be playing their games and the others be behind them? Or no one's actually worked out what's going to happen. It's a complete farce. It's actually near enough as big a farce as Brexit is.
I'm just looking, I also tweeted that this World Cup, 16 Man City players, 12 Spurs, 11 Chelsea, 11 Liverpool.
So this next World Cup year might be Arsenal's best chance at a title, if they don't take that break. I mean, look, we're gonna steamroll through that November period when no one else has their players, and unless Gabon makes the World Cup, unless Armenia makes the World Cup,
unless they get an easy part of the draw. John, what's your thoughts on the Qatar World Cup?
I don't know how they're going to do it. I'm like Steve. I'm really confused how it's going to run. The season has got to start earlier, and then you've got to get every European federation basically to agree to that. If the clubs refuse to send players, then FIFA can stop those players playing for those clubs, because they're all part of FIFA. They're, you know, FIFA registered. is against the rules to not send your player to the national team. You can get them banned in your domestic league. So there's a chance. I don't think it will happen because I just think there's too much money involved, and ultimately everyone who runs their own federation, all they're interested in is money, not the fans. There's a chance that maybe some of them think about splintering off and saying, look, we're not going to be part of FIFA anymore. There was talk UEFA wanted to break away from FIFA for a while, and that was partly to do with the whole European Super League thing. So I don't know. They'll find some way around it because the Qataris have got too much money to throw at FIFA and all the, you know, federations to make it happen. It's just the amount of money that they can throw at everyone. It will get done somehow. I mean, it will be a mess. Like in the MLS, obviously players leave. They don't have the same numbers, obviously, of players going as say a Premier League will or La Liga or anything else.
The but level of play goes like this.
Yeah.
It doesn't get affected very much.
It's not really going to affect it, is it? So, but you look at obviously the Premier League, La Liga, Serie A, Bundesliga, Ligue 1, all of those leagues are going to be, you know, just killed basically by this tournament. So they're all going to have an extended winter break. I think in the Premier League, then maybe the top, I don't know, 10 clubs might have to say, look, we're not going to compete in the League Cup for that season because it's just the extra games that we can't deal with and we just, you know, we can't fit them all in. They might even have to, a few of them, the top clubs might have to step out of the FA Cup. I don't know.
Like Man United did a few years ago.
Yeah, something like that. But there will be a way around it. But I think when it made, because of that coming up, this World Cup that's just gone, for me, was basically the last real World Cup. Because even after Qatar, the one after that is when they're going to have the expansion, is it 48 teams or something like that, which is just ridiculous. I mean, you saw some of the teams in this World Cup. I thought it was very entertaining, but some of them were clearly shouldn't have been there, you know, really weren't up to standard at all.
Panama's only role in the World Cup seemed to be allowing the dribbling twat from Middlesex to fucking flat track bully them to get the golden boot. I want the golden boot rules changed so that penalties don't count.
I mean, so you think when they expand it to 48 teams, there's going to be some very interesting sort of teams. I mean, I guess you get another strong team from Europe, but there's some, you know, Asian teams and stuff that will get in it that you think they're really going to get rolled over by the big boys.
Can I make a point though, John? Poland were ranked 8th in the world before the tournament. They went in the tournament, made a complete shit show of themselves, a fucking embarrassed the whole country. They managed to score 2 goals, I think. They got bashed by Senegal. Then they played out a complete farce with Japan, who decided that they weren't going to do any tackling in case someone got booked and they lost the game. Poland didn't want to progress the game because they were winning 1-0. And they were ranked 8th. So, you know, to be honest, if it expands to 48 and we get some teams in who cause some upsets, like, you know, some of the teams in Portugal's group, then...
I'm happy to see upsets like Iceland done in the past and sort of the so-called smaller nations. I think that's great. I just think if it lowers the quality of the football anymore, I think this World Cup, the quality of the football wasn't amazing. I mean, the entertainment value was there. I think partly of that is down to VAR and that being introduced and the kind of not knowing exactly what's going to happen.
And the pedding.
Question marks over that. But I've got to say hats off to Russia because they put on a really good tournament. There was
running now.
Apparently, no trouble there. Everyone seemed to really enjoy it. Everyone I've spoken to went out there.
Of course it did. I mean, you know, everybody who runs a World Cup, they create World Cup World. It's like enclosed places in cities where fans are. And let's be fair,
but you look at previous World Cups, there's been trouble at other ones. You know,
if you go to Russia and you're in Russia and you're hell-bent on creating trouble, you know very, very, very likely that the minimum you're going to get is a fucking massive hiding. Probably the median punishment is being bent over every night by 25 stone Yuri in your cell in Moscow Central Jail. And the last one is probably an unmarked plot in some cemetery somewhere where after they've shot you in the back of the head at the side of the road. That's why there was no trouble.
Yeah, I mean, that's all more than likely true. But I just think the, not fear-mongering, but the constant, especially in this country anyway, the media was very much, it's very dangerous out there. You can't do this, you can't do that. Probably not worth travelling. You know, it's not going to be safe for fans. If you are, you know, if you're not white, you know, you're going to be in serious danger and all these kind of things. And as far as I've seen, anyway, and as far as everyone's reported, it went off really, really well. Now, obviously, yes, Russia wouldn't look good on the world stage and everything else, but I think the tournament itself, they put on really, really well. Thought they did it great. And, you know, all the fans there all had a fantastic time. Like, the amount of Peru fans that were there was incredible, like 50,000 something.
Mike, could I ask Mike something? Mm. Was there different pricing for tickets and stuff for different continents? Because I got the distinct opinion there were so many South Americans there, and someone on the Polish TV was saying that the tickets and packages for them were a shitload cheaper than for Europeans.
I haven't the slightest idea what the ticket prices were. I never once considered going to this World Cup, so I know some people that did, and just hadn't talked prices with them at all. But I don't know the economics of a lot of these countries and how people in Senegal do for themselves financially, but it was a shitload of people making that trip. And you wouldn't normally, I guess, have envisioned Peru coming in mass like that, Senegal coming in mass like that, but they were. And to be able to sort out the travel when you don't know exactly who they're going to play next in the knockout rounds for some of these smaller countries, I was wondering about that, but I've got no clue what the ticket packages are and how any of that works. I've yet to go to a World Cup, but I guess that'll change in 8 years.
Mm-hmm. Steve, what was your thoughts about the World Cup? Because we didn't go to you to talk about that, did we?
I thought overall it was a good tournament. I agree with John. I don't think the standard of football was up to much. I thought the performance of Russia was quite amazing, and the backing of their home fans with inverted commas over the top of it for obvious reasons we don't need to go into. But I think for me, it was quite interesting, you know, to see some teams which we'd not seen before perform really well and not be phased, you know, with teams like even Saudi Arabia, Iran. They went out there and gave it their best, and they produced some great moments of football. I think there were some great laughable moments, some great shithousing moments. VAR put a stop to a lot of the bollocks when it was used, and when it wasn't used, it was used to hide a lot of the bollocks. But for me, it was an entertaining World Cup. I enjoyed it.
Do you find it more intriguing that some of the big, you know, the big boys lost very early on, the Brazil, the Germany, Argentina, or do you find that kind of sucks some of the energy out of the knockout rounds? Because, I mean, for me personally, I think it made the World Cup a lot more exciting. I'd like to see the top quality play all throughout the tournament. But, I don't think it hurt the tournament that those star players were out early because they just really didn't perform.
I don't know. I mean, I agree with you. I think it made the World Cup unpredictable. Nobody really knew what was going to happen next, and no one really knew what to sort of expect from it if you got one of those unknown sort of supposed unknown teams in the next game. So yeah, it did make it more entertaining, and of course it got to a point where only one team had ever won the World Cup before, so there was always a chance that someone who hadn't won it before would win it. Sadly they didn't, but there you go.
Yeah, the so. We're going to talk about the final as well in a minute, guys, but we just want to talk about the World Cup 11 as picked by FIFA. some good choices, I think, and right ones, but some slightly interesting ones. If you haven't seen it, I've got it here. Lloris in goal, Trippier, Varane, Lovren and Ashley Young. Not sure about that one. Paulinho, Modric, which I think most people would agree with. Hazard, Griezmann, Neymar, and Mbappe. I mean, there's a couple on there. I think Trippier and just talking about England first of all, and the two English players that got in there. I'm not quite sure why Ashley Young is in there. I think there was better fullbacks than him. But Trippier for me, I thought was outstanding for England. I'm no fan of Tottenham players. Obviously, none of us are on here, but I thought he was absolutely superb and was one of England's best players. His delivery on the ball is unbelievable. He's really, really impressive.
I think it's a positive because he won't be at Tottenham very much longer after that World Cup.
Yeah. Well, I thought the young French kid, Pavon, was it? I thought he was brilliant.
Oh, Pavard.
Yeah, Pavard.
I mean, he had a very, very good tournament, but Again, he was playing out of position as well. He's a centre back. He's not even a fullback, so he did really, really well.
Why is Lloris in goal as well after Courtois won the Golden Glove? I mean, not only did Lloris commit a complete horrendous fuck up in the final.
Oh, that was amazing. Yeah.
He had a few other fucking close shaves of his usual stupidity as well, which is exactly why he shouldn't be in that team.
I mean, there was a few games where he did pull off some decent saves where, I mean, let's be honest, France were at times in this tournament not, you know, they weren't outstanding. They had little spells where, like, especially on the break, they were excellent, obviously, and Mbappe really showed how quick he is and some of his skill, but I thought sometimes they were a little bit slow on the ball and they looked a bit suspect at the back, or if they got past Varane, that was anyway, who I thought had a very good tournament. So, like, his selection warranted. But, yeah, Courtois, I thought, was better. I thought Subasic, other than the final, where he, to me, looked like he was injured. And there was rumours he was injured for the semi-final as well. I thought he had a very good tournament. You know, the penalty saves he was making as well throughout that.
He makes a good point. Where's Matuidi?
I mean, I'm not a Matuidi fan at all. Since he's been at Juve, he's been a bit suspect, to be honest. But, you know, that one game he was out of the France side, you could see how much they missed him. I think Giroud as well was another bit of an unsung hero in that lineup.
Working his ass off every single game.
I know there was a lot of talk about him, like, not getting shots, shot on target and things like that. But what he did for the rest of the team and just allowed the others to play was very impressive. I mean, I think we all agree Modric definitely deserved it. He was just imperious throughout the whole tournament.
I think the other guy was somebody me and Chris picked out who was a fullback, was the guy whose name I can't pronounce for Croatia.
Oh, Velasco, yeah.
Yeah, he was very good. And I'm sorry, but, you know, Rakitic has to fucking be in the middle with Modric there.
Yeah, another player. I don't understand Paulinho. There was so many other better centre mids.
Neymar shouldn't be there either.
Yeah, I'm a huge Neymar fan. I know people hate Neymar and they hate rolling around and everything. I love him. I think he's brilliant. But honestly, Brazil would have been so much better off not playing him in this tournament because he clearly wasn't fit. There was no way he was fully fit at all. Because fully fit Neymar, yes, you get all the rolling about and the histrionics, but you get a much better performance from him. And they missed out because I think every time they played Douglas Costa, he looked really good on the wing. So him and Willian either side of Jesus might have done better. But yeah, like Neymar's in for, I don't know what reason.
Perisic could play there, couldn't he?
Perisic is another one you could have put there, left-hand side.
Do you think Lovren deserved to be in there, or did he talk his way in there?
I thought he had a good tournament, to be fair. He had a couple.
He's all right. I mean, he didn't suck, but I mean, let's not get carried away. You're not Varane, okay? Your pedigree isn't Varane.
I think when you look at defences in this tournament, I mean, there's an argument for someone like Harry Maguire, maybe.
John Stone.
Yeah,
as a breakout player who finally, like, solidified their name on the scene, Maguire, certainly Trippier. I mean, Trippier, however you want to say it. I mean, the first time I remember seeing him was at a North London derby where he scored an own goal for us. But, I mean, the kid can play. There was no doubt in my mind he was going to score on that free kick in the semifinal. I just didn't realize that the game was going to end there for England. But I mean, these kids are I don't know if they're kids, but they're on the scene now. Varane is just a pure superstar now.
Oh yeah, he was already. Yeah, he was so good.
That's a world class center back. Yeah, you can argue about Van Dijk, and you can argue about guys like Koscielny in their prime, which is way long ago. But Varane is an example of a guy that you're just not going to be able to get past.
Someone in the chat, sorry, who put it, Mayank, put in Vida was better. And I think he's got an argument as well. Yeah, I thought Vida was better than Lovren. But, you know, fair play to him. I thought Croatia were really good throughout the tournament.
The one with the ponytail, scored the header.
Yes, he's the one with the weird undercut, shaved head thing.
Touch of the carpenters about him.
Touch of the carpenters. I mean that as usual, FIFA's World 11 is, I think most people sort of looked at him and went, why is Lloris in? Why is Ashley Young in? Hazard showed up in spaces, but again, there's probably other better players. Neymar, no. Paulinho as well, you know. So
Paulinho's so good, he's gone back to China from
Bar. Yeah, really.
If you have a great World Cup, that's what you do. You go to China again.
Do you want to talk about the final? Danny, what did you make of the final? Because that for me is probably the most exciting final I've seen for a while. It was very weird. It's not a typical World Cup final at all, was it?
Well, I didn't. When I'm watching Arsenal, I'll stop what I'm doing. I'll go and sit 4 foot from the TV and I'll be like that. And I won't miss a thing. Not I won't remember it, but there's no World Cup games. I did that. I sat here. The 55-inch Sony's over there, so it's a bit of an angle. Sometimes the light's on it. But I really enjoyed the game. I really wanted France to win for Giroud, but I really wanted Croatia to win because it's always nice for, like one of you were saying, a new team to win it. My mate Herman is in the chat box. He's been on twice. And Lana would have gone mental if France wouldn't have won it. She would have gone mental if France did win it. That was also funny. Now she's full on board again with Deschamps, thinking he's the greatest player ever, or player manager ever. But it's really exciting. When they scored to make it 3-1, I think I tweeted at the time, oh, there's more goals in this game. 5-4, anybody. So I got the 4-bit right. I just didn't get the 5-bit right. But it's just, that's what happens when two teams go for it. And we've seen so many World Cup, most World Cup finals, get off me. Most World Cup finals, they've just been slowly, slowly catchy monkey. And no one wants to make a mistake and no one's pushing. And it's just wonderful to see on the biggest stage in the world, probably one of the biggest games that has ever been played in the history of football, because of everybody now has access to the game, whether it be on the internet or whether they're watching it in Rumble's shop windows or anything like that. And they put on a fantastic spectacle, and it's a fantastic World Cup. Really enjoyed so many. It started off superbly, then it got a bit slow. Then all the VAR came in, which kept me going when the rest of the stuff was going wonky. Then towards the end, there was hardly any VAR penalties apart from that one in the final. I really enjoyed it. It was really good. And I was watching a programme with... what's his name? Bearded Scottish bloke. What's his... Oh, he's swearing.
Billy Connolly.
No, not that legend. No.
Oh, Frankie Boyle.
Frankie Boyle, and he did a thing in Russia.
Oh, I saw that, yeah.
He was saying that basically there's going to be zero trouble in Russia because the Russian police have said, you either stay in your house or you fuck off out of the country. Otherwise, we're going to have you. And I think that's one of the reasons. That's when I first realised, oh, no, there's going to be no trouble at this World Cup. I really enjoyed it. I feel really bad for Herman. And he was sending me pictures. And he sent me a video of all of his friends. Now, there's about 10 of these mates. They were all dressed in, men and women, all dressed in their Croatia kits. And they had all the hats and the scarves. And or not scarves, it's really hot there. And they were having dinner. And I thought, oh, that is a wonderful atmosphere. If that had been England in the World Cup final, there'd have been 10 people trying to stab each other because they were all drunk, smashing. It would have been like a table, ladder and chair match at WWF. But yeah, the gist of that is I really liked it.
What did you guys make of the penalty? Because I know, obviously, the scoreline was 4-2 in the end. And I think it kind of overshadows how well Croatia did in the final. Was it a penalty for you guys? Because everyone I spoke to has been seriously split on this, like one way or the other. So Steve first, and then we'll go to Mike.
No
penalty for you. Mike?
No player like Perisic goes and does that in the World Cup final in his own box. No.
I don't think it was a penalty, and I was sure they weren't going to overturn it. So, you know, again, I'm wrong on both counts apparently, but that's not unusual. Yeah. I was surprised. I didn't think they deserved that one.
Yeah.
But there were a lot of those types of, you know, ball to hand. And keep in mind, I was probably about a dozen or two dozen beers deep at the point. So I don't really remember the exact situation, but it was another kind of ball to hand type of deal, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, when I saw it at the time, I thought, no penalty, no way. And then I couldn't believe that he'd even gone to VAR and that they were reviewing it. And then the ref's there for so, it took so long, steps away and then goes back again. I was like, he can't be certain, surely. If he's doing that and taking so long, there's no way he's certain. And then in a game
on it, where they informed him, you're not allowed to do that unless he asks them.
I wasn't sure
what they were saying.
The VAR rule was, for the tournament anyway, was if there was a clear and obvious error, then they can inform the ref. And then it's up to the ref's discretion whether he even looks at it or not. It's up to him. Ultimately, the final decision is always the referee's. Doesn't matter what the people on the, you know, the full kit wankers in the studios tell him to do or like let him look at. But I mean,
there
just
were,
looking
but
at
there were so chat. Many of those. There were so many of those in this tournament. And the ones that stick out for me are, you know, with the Portugal one against, it was either Morocco or Iran. That one I could not believe they called a penalty, and it had a huge impact on the way the tournament went. But the vast majority, you know, and then there's the one I forget who it was that made himself big with his hand over his head, and they called that one.
I think that might have been, was that MTT? I think for France, maybe. Did he handball?
I don't think so. But I know who it was, but I can't think of it. But most of the ball to hand things were not called penalties, but the ones that were in pretty big situations. I don't know that that, you know, that that cost Croatia the World Cup final in this one. But
did you hear Gary Lineker saying, I think they should change the rule on this and any ball to hand, no matter what the situation, should be a penalty? I thought, I bet you bloody do your penalty taking tit. Harry Kane would have finished top scorer of about 32 goals.
The thing with it is,
cutting their arms off in order to become greater defenders. I mean,
yeah, I think the thing with it is, after I looked at it over and over and over again, and there's like so many people, like in the chat here, we've got loads of people, like it's literally split down the middle. Some people saying definite pen, other people saying no way, it's not a penalty. His hand obviously does go down, but he's jumped, so his arms are up and then they come down naturally.
It's gravity.
Is it an instinctual thing where you're not doing it on purpose, your hand just goes down like that?
It was PK. Mr. Kennedy's got it. It was PK.
Ah, there we go. PK, yeah. Yeah, so it's one of those ones where I think it's so 50-50, and it shows that VAR will never clear up every decision in football, that it's going to go one way or the other. I felt bad for Croatia because I thought they played better for large majorities of the final than France did, to be honest. France, you know, they did it perfectly, rode their luck at times at the back because Croatia did create some good openings, but just hit them really well on the break. So it's a weird final because the team that lost, I thought, was probably better than France throughout the 90 minutes.
Speaking of Croatia and openings, is it wrong that I want to fuck the president of Croatia?
I mean, don't say that.
Am I going to be in trouble for that? Is this being monitored by, by NATO?
It's fine. We live in Europe. It doesn't matter anymore. She was very friendly, wasn't she?
Something about the whole sport element. I mean, you know, she's not necessarily a model, but she was really into this. So
you being the old romantic that you are, you can pass up the opportunity to let her know.
Mm-hmm. Look, I've been married for 22 happy years, but, you know, if the president of a country comes up to me, you know, I'm taking it.
Apologies, Jaden.
Especially just in the World Cup final. I mean, if the president of, you know, the U.S. comes up to me, well, let's not talk about that.
But she was very, very friendly. But I just thought Croatia were brilliant throughout the tournament. The Mandzukic, the second goal from Lloris. Oh, that was... I mean, you have the end of the season, you get to Champions League final. Everyone in the world is basically cheering Real Madrid other than Liverpool and Barcelona fans. That's it. You know, everyone's cheering Real Madrid. And you see Karius do what he does and you think, that's never going to be topped. Never going to be topped in a Champions League final. What a complete cock up. And then you get to a World Cup final. You know, you're still under pressure despite the fact you're 4-1 up and you're not really playing that well. And you give a goal away like that for like the last 15 minutes just to invite it all on.
Spursy, though, isn't it?
It's very, very Spursy. Yeah.
Very Middlesex. I mean, for me, I liked Croatia and I thought they played really, really constructive, good position football. I thought Modric was absolutely brilliant. I remember at one point the Pirate saying to me, we were watching a game, and he said, Is there a better midfield pairing than him and Rakitic? And I said, sadly, yes, Modric and Kroos. But I think if you want to put your finger on why Croatia didn't win, I think their lack of ruthlessness in front of goal with the chances that they made cost them, because they created so many chances in every game that went to extra time. If they'd taken them and not had to play that extra time, they probably would have performed a bit better in the final. I do think that penalty psychologically affected them in the final.
Yeah.
I think the way they let the next goal in was particularly a great example of a team that switched off and was thinking about something else. And that's where it all went tits up. But, you know, I think they can be very proud of themselves. I mean, you've got to put that into perspective. That's a country of 4 million people. So it's basically Manchester plus Leeds, taking on France of 75 million. It's quite a muck. And you're right, France all through the tournament, they were dodgy at the back despite Varane's efforts. They had Lloris there just waiting to do a Middlesex moment. And, you know, it wasn't till Kante woke up a bit that Pogba started to perform in midfield. But the guy really pulling the strings for me was Griezmann. And I thought he was excellent.
Yeah,
goal threats though, didn't they? That's what Croatia needed in that squad. was a Davor Suka, someone like that, who is an Ian Wright style player who's going to go and poach you goals. You've got Mandzukic there, who's a kind of Giroud, but they didn't have anyone. They brought that young bloke on. Is it Kramaric?
Kramaric, yeah.
Yeah, they brought him, but he's never going to do it, is it? But if they'd have had someone nippy and quick who could have played up.
That's the problem, isn't it? No pace. Mm.
I mean, you got Perisic and Rebic, obviously, I thought were both excellent. Perisic in particular was really, really good. Fingers crossed he stays at Inter. Well, unless he comes to Arsenal, that's fine. He can come there as well. Yeah, there's definitely room for a winger. But Mandzukic just, he wasn't quite on it. And I think because he was basically the battering ram for the forward line, he was never quite there to finish all the time. Interesting. I wonder what Nico Kalinic thinks, because he left after the first game. He refused.
Did he leave, or was
yeah, he left? It wouldn't surprise me if he left himself. Honestly, he's that kind of player. But he left because he refused to come on as a sub. I think in the first game,
against Nigeria,
insulting. Yeah. So I'm not saying
he said he had a knee injury and he didn't need to risk it in that situation. He doesn't get a medal, does he?
Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying he would have solved all their problems up front, by no means at all. But I wonder what he's thinking about now. What he could have been, part of all of that. But the tournament
wasn't going to be overly bothered by it.
He's a bit of a weird bloke. Yeah.
I'll give you an example of when Beckham kicked. Was it Diego Simeone? When he kicked him, he came back and he must have had to go into hiding, and all he did was back healing when he's laying on the floor. Imagine if someone would have refused to come on for England. My God, they'd have to go. They'd have to change their nationality. They'd have to go and live in Luxembourg for the rest of their life, because England fans would hunt them down. And
Herman, you would have refused to come on for England, Ernie.
Well, it depends on who the manager is. I love Gareth Southgate. There's so many positives from that England team for me. Gareth Southgate is brilliant, and Pickford. Pickford was
Lee Judges calls him Pickland. he did one of his videos and he's like, yeah, Pickland has been looking great in that.
Well, even without him, all three of the England goalkeepers I really like, and that's a rarity, isn't it?
Yeah. Lots of people in the chat giving love for N'Golo Kante. I know Josh isn't a huge fan of him, but his teammates aren't lying when they say he's got four lungs.
How can you not be a fan of that guy?
He's professionally. Did you see the story about him asking someone else to ask if he could hold the World Cup?
He could hold the World Cup, yeah.
There's a brilliant photograph of him holding it. He's like on his knees and he's just looking at it like Gollum. As if he's got his little precious. Well, I'll try and find it.
Can I eat this?
No, it's just like basically, mine. This is all mine. Precious. Just his eyes have lit right up, like he's looking at it.
I mean, he just seems like the most likable guy in world football, probably. Yeah. And I mean, my God, you'd want him on your team any day of the week.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Leicester players always still talk about him. Everyone at Chelsea always gets the team player of the season award. And they've got guys like Hazard who occasionally performs,
Some people are big fish in a small pond, and that could have been said about him at Leicester. The jump to Chelsea can make you or ruin you. And I mean, he handled it without even batting an eye.
Yeah. And he really
Kante now, aren't we?
I think he. We have got our own South American one. Yeah, I just think what he let
the Enkazarl are wrapped into one.
What he let Pogba do in the later stages of the tournament when Pogba started playing, and for all the people saying, "Oh, Pogba's terrible when he came to the Premier League," it's Mourinho. It's not Pogba. It's Mourinho. It's what he's done to him.
And that's
see the good bits of him.
Yeah. Long may he stay at United, ruining players.
Absolutely. Hopefully we can get some of them as well when they get fed up with it.
Can I just get a shout out for Alexis Sanchez? I've got a criminal record and I can't get a visa to America, so I can't go to the preseason.
That is the first... I'm not a huge fan of our immigration policies, but I am in this particular instance, because that guy could go fucking...
What's he got a criminal record for?
Tax evasion.
No, not for dog nonsense, for tax evasion in Spain.
Bloody hell, that's half of the people who play for Spain can't go in. Wow.
I mean, for me, I mean, there were some brilliant young players that came out of the World Cup. I think the guy we talked about earlier on for France, Pavard, was one. Yeah. Obviously, Torreira was another. Can you think of any more lads, young players that stood out for you?
I mean, Golovin for Russia, I thought was excellent. Yeah. The sort of the one that no one really spoke about for Russia as well before, Cheryshev, was fantastic. He was really, really good. Some of the goals he scored was fantastic.
I had Maguire on that list as kind of a breakout. I mean, I was surprised to see him included in the team to begin with. I just didn't think it was quite his time yet, but he certainly
grew into it, didn't he?
Yeah, so we'll see which Manchester team he ends up with in about 3 weeks.
Sanchez is getting love. Archie says Dog Shaka can stay at home, and Loki's called him a dirty dog fiddler.
I've been telling you guys about freaking Humber for the last 2 years, if you've been listening. It's all coming home to roost now. I'm starting to think Adam's kind of a dickhole, too.
Yerry Mina for Colombia, a few people saying as well. Yeah, I mean, he scored him. He's just a monster of a man. I know a couple of Barca fans who aren't particularly keen on him. I think
they're spoiled
for choice though, but yeah, he's an absolute monster. Who was the guys at PSV, the Mexican?
I thought
he was very, very good as well. Mexico were really fun to watch as well in the tournament, always are. That result against Germany was great. I felt very sorry for Julian Brandt for Germany, because every time he came on, he literally first touched the ball, spanked it from 30 yards and hit the post, and he couldn't get a game when none of the others could even like get near the goal.
could get a game where Robert Müller was stinking the fucking pitch up for the whole World Cup.
He was doing lots of tricks on his teammates, and he looked like Christian Caramba, and I thought he played for Costa Rica, but I've got two stickers missing for Costa Rica, so he might have been one of those two. The way Canberra used to have dreadlocks.
Have you done a Panini show yet where you've just gone through your
The best thing about the Panini book is that the France squad has got like Koscielny in it, Lacazette. There's like about five players that didn't even make the squad that are in the Panini book. It's fantastic. There was a couple of guys for Nigeria as well. Stoke signed one of the Nigerian, I think, was it Nigerian midfielders?
That's right,
Who I suspect will now maybe be bought by someone else. Ndidi, who obviously plays in the Premier League, I thought he had a very good campaign.
The guy who plays for Leicester was very good as well.
Yeah. So, there was a lot of exciting young talent. And the weird thing was that it wasn't from the expected teams.
The bloke Stoke bought.
It wasn't Spanish. It wasn't the German. Like Mike already said, it wasn't the big boys going through. Other than France, really, sort of one of the fancied nations, but all the sort of exciting young talent were all from what would be considered the fringe countries, like Mexico, like Russia.
Also there's a lot of talent in Senegal that needs to have the slide rule run over it.
Yeah, definitely.
Got a big, strong, athletic, very skilled, very technically minded footballers. Clearly know their strategy, and Jesus Christ, all got lungs like Kante.
I suspect that Senegal and Nigeria will both do much better at the next World Cup tournament, because both those squads were fairly young.
There's always a team that, you know, what they lack in natural ability, they make up for in preparation and having those extra lungs for, you know, just running and running and running. And that you end up with these upsets because of that.
The Iranian goalkeeper as well. He was very impressive.
Yes, yeah, he was really good. The other one was the Japanese winger, Inui. I think he's joined Real Betis, I believe.
He's been called the next Rio Miachi, I've heard. So
he's got he looks better than Miachi to me, and Real Betis did an amazing reveal for his signing for Betis as well. So if you haven't seen that, look up, go to Real Betis' Twitter.
Manchester City did for Mahrez with the Teletubbies.
Oh, this is insane. If you're a fan of like Dragon Ball Z or any like anime stuff, it's nuts. It's got Luigi in it and, all sorts of stuff. But I was really impressed by him as well.
It's Peter Kennelly's birthday today, if he's listening. Happy birthday, Peter.
Happy birthday, Peter.
Is it today or is it tomorrow? Because he's all the way out in Australia, so it might be tomorrow.
It could well be tomorrow.
Oh, no. Did you not see earlier, Danny? Peter, what? Australia doesn't exist. Flat Earth has said it's a myth.
Yes. is it part of the Matrix?
Yeah.
It doesn't exist.
what about Arsenal players' contribution in the World Cup? There wasn't much of it. Iwobi.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're non-existent.
Basically non-existent. I mean, Torreira was the obviously now an Arsenal player. He was the shining example.
Good at times.
If you look England out, if he'd had a slightly stronger wrist for that Eric Dier penalty.
I love it when Jace calls him Dave the Bins. Dave the Bins.
But for me, the thing about Iwobi is I watched him in the World Cup and I was thinking to myself, I just, knowing how Emery likes his teams to play, I just can't see he's got a future at Arsenal. And then I was watching yesterday, or when was it? Whenever we played Boreham Wood.
Saturday.
And you're thinking, oh, yeah, right, he's into pressing and he wants his players to run around constantly for 95, 105 minutes. And Iwobi couldn't even, for his own country, manage more than 45 minutes. And then he has a half time, and then 5 minutes later, he's dead.
Nigeria, and now he couldn't even do that. I was shocked by that. I mean, the one time you expect him to actually make a difference is when he's wearing green, to the point where I used to petition for him to be able to wear green during Arsenal games. But
it's almost like he's discovered, like, you know, women smoking and beer. And well, he's doing
he loves a 3:30 in the morning visit to the club. We know that.
Yeah. But, you know, it's definitely something wrong going on there. And I'm very, very sure that he's first on the list to be shipped out if my eye makes me see it as it is.
I would say one thing about you look at Kolasinac, who is already trimmer than he was last season, with the exception of his horrifically large fight.
Jesus.
The walnut crackers.
Wow. He could crack a tree with him. I don't know about walnuts. Jesus. But yeah.
It's like the Hulk, muscles on muscles.
Yeah, he's certainly like slimmed down a little bit. So maybe that if Iwobi loses a little bit of weight, then he could do that. It's not weight, it's trimming the muscle.
Trying to tell Iwobi to lose weight. I mean, you know, I can only preach what I know. So is it bad that I'm thrilled that Arsenal players A, barely made the World Cup, and B, barely lasted in the World Cup? I mean, I've always wanted to root for our boys and wanted them to do well when Ozil won the World Cup. Have we signed him yet, or did we sign him right after that?
I think it was after, wasn't it?
It's always been, you know, other than England and the US for me, I'll root for Arsenal players, but especially when the first two games came out, or when our schedule came out, we saw that we had Manchester City, Chelsea, the first two games. It really started me thinking, you know, I don't want any of our players. This will be the first time we come into a season with a rested squad. And we've already seen, you know, people playing at Boreham Wood in the first preseason game that never even would have been anywhere close to the British Isles in the middle of July before. So I'm thrilled about it. I mean, so it's not our fault. We have the best player in Gabon and the best player in Armenia. And these are teams that have no other good players. And, and so we might actually start off strong this time. And I couldn't be happier about it. I wasn't rooting against them. I wasn't thrilled for Xhaka and Lichtsteiner to get eliminated when they were, but it didn't bother me.
It's definitely a huge benefit because
no one stood out.
You know, it's not even, you know, it's World Cup, it's Euros, African Cup of Nations. We've had it before where you get it in the middle of the January.
South African thing.
Yeah, it's
South America thing, rather.
Yeah, the Copa America as well.
That was 2013.
Honestly. Yeah, so it's been a while since we've had near enough the full squad back training this early. And especially in a window where, you know, the season, it's not starting earlier, but the window's closing sooner. And Ozil's in for the squad for the Singapore trip as well. So
is Iwobi.
Yeah. So, you know, it's pretty good.
I think it's good. I think it's the first time they've all had a proper season. They've all been able to prepare properly. And I think the whole thing as well is good for Emery because he's able to run the slide rule over them all and make his decisions about who's staying, who's going. I mean, I know Lichtenstein and Xhaka haven't reported yet. Ozil hasn't reported yet, but they'll all be there. I think Welbeck's probably the one who went to the World Cup and played the least minutes out of our players, and he's probably the one whose contract's closest to running out.
So other than Monreal, I think you're probably right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
I don't think Nacho got in the game. I think Welbeck might have gotten 5 minutes.
I'm just looking at the World Cup stats that I'm sure I read someone did a tweet that said Ozil had the best games to minutes to assist ratio, and I thought that can't be bloody right. The most assists anybody got in the World Cup was two.
He
assists or chances created.
Yeah, Ozil had the most chances created. Unfortunately,
4.5 or something.
Yeah, no one in the German shirt could finish them.
Not even from point blank range with a header with the goalkeeper on the other side of the pitch. Yeah. Hummels had to put that in row ZZ because why not?
Yeah.
But the bookies loved them for it. So should we talk about our man from Frei Bentos?
if you want to go into him, and then we'll do some questions.
Okay. So, Frei Bentos, English people's ears will be pricking up. Saying, oh, well, that's beef pie, steak and kidney puddings. Well, yes, the little port in Uruguay called Frei Bentos is where the factory, which was originally owned by a German guy, made the fillings for Frei Bentos pies and puddings, and they canned them there. And they also made OXO cubes there as well. It was taken over by Brook Bond later on, and then it left Uruguay. They made corned beef there as well, which they used to send to the troops in the war. So it left Uruguay, that factory, and came to England in 1964. But Torreira comes from there. I think he was a very industrious, very calm player who's quite prepared to put his body on the line. His distribution's good. As a metronome, to tick the team over and keep it going is very good. But what I loved about him is his constant scanning of the pitch, left and right, front and back, seeing where everybody is, his reading of the game. I mean, for somebody so young, he's so bloody clever, so brilliant about his positioning, and not being afraid to shout at Cavani or Suarez to get into position either. And then you've got like his madness where he's lying on the floor half dead and he's trying to head the ball out of the way while people are kicking it.
I mean, is he not going to? That's called Phil Jonesing. But he's not going to get caught out of position too far up the pitch, you know, trying to make a slaloming run in on goal and leave our back four exposed. I just don't get that feeling from him. At the end of Kalkoen's run, he was doing that. And then he's even been caught doing that. Torreira just doesn't seem, he seems more positionally aware. And as little as I've seen of him, I can't wait to see more. I mean, that's going to be an exciting pickup. I hope it works out.
Yeah, I mean,
sorry, Steve, go on.
The way he runs, the way he sort of positions himself, he's the guy that's going to set Ramsey and Xhaka free. You know, he's the guy who's going to be telling the two twats behind him that they're not standing on the fucking halfway line, that they're not going to be, you know, going up for every corner. He's not just a DM. He's someone who can distribute the ball. He's always got an out as well. He'll try and dribble his way out. He'll use his body shape to get himself out of something. And as we see, you know, taking out Cristiano Ronaldo twice his size almost, he's not afraid to put himself about a bit either, which is quite funny.
And it's a transfer that, I mean, I don't want to make a referendum on the usual topics, but that transfer never would have happened before because it seems that we really kind of did nail it down with them before the World Cup. It almost like buying an option in the stock market where the deal was done. And for once it didn't fall apart because of all of a sudden somebody getting a lot more notoriety on the world stage. I mean, the price didn't seem to increase. The deal ended up getting done as planned. And it just seems like in the past that those things would, all of a sudden it would have been 40 million and it would have been Chelsea.
Yeah.
And that's just another feel good element to the way we go into this season.
Well, I think that's the success of the new team, isn't it? That they're sitting there talking with Emery and Casidero, his second in command. They know what sort of players he wants. They're going to him with players. The guy likes video, probably Mr. Slats talking them through why he'd be good, where he'd be good, who he'd be good playing with. And he's like, yes or no, you know, he's not dithering. You haven't got Dickie Boy in there fucking up the deal. Do you remember when he went to sign Joel Campbell, thought he'd signed him and got to the airport and it turned out that the contract he got wasn't signed, so he had to go fucking back.
Well, he missed the plane as well. He nearly messed up the Ozil deal as well, didn't he? He got to the airport at the wrong time and missed the plane.
The Arshavin deal was late.
Yeah.
I
don't want to do this as a we're bashing Arsenal thing because this is like everything.
No, we're not. We're all in love with Arsenal again. Yeah. I don't know a single good. Even Mark King's up for the new season, and that's saying something.
It's true of every football club.
He's got the permits for the protest just in case, though.
Every football club makes huge mistakes and errors, and if you knew some of the stories about some of the things and way deals are done, it's hilarious how they manage to get anything done at a football club, to be honest, because oftentimes they don't know their arsehole from the mirror elbow, to be perfectly honest.
Some clubs just somehow don't end up having those things happen to them. You never see that happen with Bayern Munich.
Should we do some questions, Danny?
Yeah, go on in.
Yeah.
You would want to ask them.
Yeah, I'll do them, yeah.
Okay, good.
Got one from Twitter from Noir Confidential.
I've asked him to confirm this, and yes. As yet, he hasn't, because to me, that question doesn't make any sense to see if he's replied to it.
Okay.
No, he hasn't.
Okay, so the question is, how do you feel about the fact that a Spurs player has captained his national team to World Cup glory? Personally, I would have felt a lot worse if Harry Kane did that. Lloris was the captain, wasn't he, for France? Yeah.
Oh, is that what he means?
Yeah, Lloris is the captain. Yeah.
I didn't know. I always thought Pogba was captain.
He was saying better Lloris than Kane.
Yeah.
A player left in the World Cup.
Yeah, I mean, personally for me, I had, I know I'm English, I should support England, blah, blah, blah. I had no real vested interest in who wins the World Cup. I'm not a huge international football fan. If there is a tournament on and Italy are in it, generally I support Italy just because I watch the league a lot and I like the players. So I wasn't fussed about who won it. Is Lloris winning it better than Kane? They both play for Spurs. One's English, one's not. I was happy in him because Giroud got to lift the title. Lift it, and that's great.
Oh, but you can't say that though, because he's a Chelsea player. No, don't do that.
But I would have been equally as happy if Modric had lifted it, who was previously a Spurs player as well. But he's a fantastic footballer. Mm. If England had won it, then fantastic. Well done, Gareth Southgate. And okay, it would have been Harry Kane, but there's a lot of excitement and youth around the English team. So I guess it's slightly better. The only thing that annoyed me with France winning it is I hate Griezmann. But it's completely irrational because I don't like his haircuts. I don't like his goal celebration. And I don't like the stupid video he did about le decision, about whether he said let go or not.
Yeah, you're not LeBron James, dude. You're not.
At the same time, I like Paul Pogba, who has stupid haircuts, does stupid celebrations, and does stupid videos. So he's exactly the same player, essentially. I just hate one for no reason and like the other.
You're like an anti-racist then. In this case.
Yeah. Basically, I hate small white people. There we go.
Chris, out of this. Fuck's sake.
That actually ties it perfectly, Chris. Moving to
you said the silly haircut, the bed sheets. Oh wait, that was
We'll move quickly on to a sensible question. One from Peter Colson. He's got a couple, actually. Do the esteemed panel think that VAR was a success at the World Cup? And if they do, why are the... Yeah, we'll skip that bit. Why are the blah, blah at the Premier League not introducing it this season?
There's no bias in that question whatsoever.
Steve, what do you think of that?
I think VAR was a success. I still think the big question about VAR is... how it works, in other words, how it's used, needs to be spelt out in letters about 2 meters high and words of 3 syllables so that your average fan can actually get it, digest it and understand it. I think they need to work about how they're going to communicate, not to people on TV at home, but how they're going to communicate to the crowd what's going on. But I thought it cut out a lot of the play acting, a lot of the bollocks that was going on in the world would have gone on in the World Cup. I think the reason why the Premier League haven't introduced it yet is either one or two things. It's either because they weren't prepared for it and they haven't worked out how to use it yet, so they're still trialing it, which they are doing, or there were some clubs in there that were afraid that their whole advantage, which goes through the whole season by using referees, ignoring their rota fouling, cheating and fucking diving, Tottenham, would be got rid of. And probably the same applies to Manchester United and Liverpool. It's going to end up coming to the Premier League anyway, whether they like it or not.
It's not next season, but the season after it is being introduced, apparently. That's the quote at the moment anyway.
Yeah, so they need to just work on how they're going to communicate to the fans what's going on. I actually think refs should be mic'd up like in the NFL. I think refs should signal VAR I think they should go and have a look at it. I think they should come back and they should stand in an area of the pitch where no players are allowed to turn the mic on and say what the decision is.
Yeah.
And then turn it off again. Otherwise, you'll be hearing Wayne Rooney shouting at the FNC word.
By the way, debuted for my local club on Saturday, which is a fiasco. You probably didn't even realize he was playing in the States.
Oh, yeah, then. DC United. Yeah.
Left the Premier League like a whimper. Most people wouldn't even know he's gone.
Yeah, that was very strange, that. Yeah, but just quickly before we go on to the next question, just Mike and Danny as well. Did you think VAR was a success overall?
Mike?
I think it was a success, but I would agree that there doesn't seem to be any consistency of use. Okay, so there's a room back in Moscow that they're looking at things, but then in some cases the ref has to jog over to the television to look, and in some cases he doesn't. It takes 5 seconds sometimes. It takes 2 minutes other times. They've got to work out the kinks. I'm not so much of a traditionalist that I hate it. I like getting the decisions right. But you have to figure out how to apply it, because there are still some areas of the game, unlike offside, there are areas like the handball thing where you know, even with VAR, you still have two different opinions of the person who's doing it, and you don't get consistent outcomes. So do I like oversight that ends up maybe with a slight delay but getting the call right? Yes. Have they perfected it? No, not even close.
Yeah. I think that's fair. Danny, for you, did you enjoy VAR? Do you think it was good?
If your aim of VAR is to make the games more interesting, then it worked, and it worked brilliantly. If your aim is to make the games more fairer, occasionally it worked. But if your idea is to aim is to try and stop cheating, it didn't work at all, because Neymar should have been booked and sent off so many times. So many players were rolling around. Well, I'm not going to say it. We all saw it. We all know what happened.
What about Mascherano, who twice kicked balls from three meters or less away right at people's heads and never got a yellow card for it? I mean, that's where you need to use it.
But it's not been used. It needs to be used for, like Steve said, it needs to be explained more and say, right, it is to be used for this. If the referee doesn't see it, the incident, then we're not going to call him to come and have a look at it. Or even if the referee isn't watching the incident, then we're going to have people let him know what's happened. And then if that's going to be the case, why even have a bloke on the field? He can just have the announcer go, no, everyone stop. We see it. We saw that. You twat. You've dived. You've cheated. So for the entertainment purposes, I liked it. But I still like the dark arts in football. I like the David Hill era approach of, you know, go out there, let them know you're there. That sort of stuff will be missed from football if every single thing is picked up. So
they got to come up with something better than this too. There's got to be like
players do that. Instant yellow.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, it's supposed to be yellow for that, and he's supposed to be yellow for waving the, you know, someone's got to be booked and all that kind of thing.
You have four people left on the pitch at the end of the game.
It's all, I think, like Steve said, you know, and Mike as well, it's all for the right intentions, and I think they got more decisions correct than wrong in this World Cup, and it stopped some of the ridiculous sort of tackling and stuff at corners and things like that, and shirt pulling. If that actually comes in and they start using that as a rule, eventually players will just stop doing it. And it means that maybe set pieces becoming more important. And obviously in this World Cup, they were huge set pieces. I think it was the most goals scored from set pieces at a World Cup tournament. So
98% of the goals were scored off.
Yeah. Wow. So, you know, that becomes a bigger part of the game. So you have to be tactically more smart. Your defending has to be done slightly different because you can't do that kind of thing. So it's an adjustment, but lots of things in football have changed before. Like, Steve, obviously you remember like the back pass, the goalkeeper being able to pick the ball up, things like that. And, you know, that's a huge difference.
I think we're all old enough to remember that.
Yeah. I mean,
if that role didn't existed back in 1989, there would have been no championship, no league title for us.
Yeah. You know, so lots of things in football have changed before. And I think it's just the kind of progress with it, but the most important thing is getting it clear and across to the fans in the stadium for me, because if they're not involved and I don't know what's happening, it just ruins that experience. And ultimately, obviously, the much more money's made from TV and all the millions of people watching around the world, but the ones in the stadium, the ones that make the atmosphere and make people want to watch it in the first place.
And Russia are great at that.
Yeah.
And Croatia, most of them were. I was just wondering, talking about Neymar, all this stuff, I have never seen so much social media and hatred and piss taking out of one bloke, like an American college had about 60 kids, the young kids running
60
around.
Kids
running.
Oh,
yeah, I mean, tell them what it is, Mike, because that's brilliant.
Oh, I mean, they're videos from all over the world where these youth clubs, 6, 7, 8 year olds, they're all just running down the pitch, dribbling the ball. And all of a sudden, the coach just shouts out Neymar as loud as he can. And all the kids just dive to the ground and start rolling around, holding their ankles and screaming. It's brilliant. I mean, there's a lot of copycat videos, but if he doesn't want that to be his MO, then he should stop doing it.
He doesn't need to do it.
I get that he's targeted more than anyone. I get that he's fouled. I understand the need for protection, from referees, in the sense that, you know, you can't just have a strategy of physically taking him out of the game as a way of beating Brazil or of beating PSG. But, he deserves it, though. I mean, there's no sympathy. There's no sympathetic element to him at all, because he's clearly going out trying to play mind games instead of playing football.
It is quite incredible how I've never seen a player targeted like that before. Like all over the internet. It has been everywhere. Wasn't there a game in I don't know if it was like Mexican top division or not, but it was somewhere in Mexico, and the halftime entertainment was a competition to see who could Neymar from the halfway line to the goal line quickest. And it was like
Neymar's a verb rolling. It's a verb now.
At Wimbledon, didn't he? I think the older players were doing doubles, and one of them fell over and started doing a Neymar, and they go, "Oh, I'm dying!"
Yeah,
and then the other like started to give him CPR.
I was having a little a nice little evening with my wife on Sunday night, and all of a sudden she started Neymaring, and I was like,
"Well, was Andy there?
You want to tell me something there?" And he was on FaceTime.
That'd be all it. Right.
Another question from Pete Colson, a little cheeky one, but I will ask it. Should we blame Wenger for not securing Mbappe's signature while he was at his parents' house? Surely he should have offered his father unlimited coke and hookers for life. I'm sure Arsene did everything in his power to try and get Mbappe, and he tried to sign him the season before that as well. But look, when you look at PSG, spent,
80 million quid.
Something like that, yeah. And that was just for a loan for the season, and then they have to pay it, and now they're going to have to flog a load of players to conform with FFP. We were never going to be able to pay that kind of money.
Well, we wouldn't have needed to if we had signed them then, but we also wouldn't have been able to keep them.
No, yeah. I mean, he would have been, if we'd got him, we would have kept him 2 years max. Of course,
he might have ended up more like a Wobi than Mbappe anyway if we'd gotten him at 17 years of age.
It would have been another Anelka situation, wouldn't it? Just a matter of time.
Yeah, he was always going to go. I don't know how long he'll even be at PSG, to be honest.
The coke and hookers thing, though, is how you get Neymar to join your team. Because the father is involved in that big time. So
apparently, allegedly.
Yeah. Right, another question from Arsenic Gunner in case. Why are the English media not putting out the Giroud dream story from lower leagues to Arsenal and winning the World Cup like they did with Vardy?
English media. They're not French media.
I don't read a lot of the papers here anyway. I saw Matt Law put a tweet out about it and saying how incredible it is and how he's been knocked back so many times and where he's come up and sort of risen from to go on and win it. And he had a bit of an argument with a few people, because some people were saying, oh, well, Giroud didn't even have a shot on target the whole tournament to the last 10 minutes or something. And he was actually defending Giroud. So, I mean, that's only one journalist, but...
He's got to, because he's the in-house Chelsea reporter for the Daily Mail. So,
yeah.
I mean, firstly, the reason why they're not reporting is there's two reasons. First of all, they're the English media, not the French media. And secondly, because he's an ex-Arsenal player, there's enough of them in there to have agendas against Arsenal to not report anything positive about Arsenal at all. So that's why it didn't appear in there.
Ascendancy as dramatic, though? I mean, Vardy went from Fleetwood Town, non-league team, directly to Championship Leicester. Yeah. And then the promotion, and then 2 years later, the title. I don't know that Giroud – I mean, Giroud came from pretty low down, but I don't know if it was that low down.
Fifth tier, he was playing in.
When it was more, Giroud's progress was more
longer.
Steady, than say Vardy's was. But yeah, I'm sure in the French media, there probably is a lot more about it, that kind of thing. And I know there were some really good articles as well about the, this is a victory for immigrants as well. So obviously a lot of the families are immigrants to France.
There's a lot of that here, as you might imagine, with the discussion about immigration. There's a ton of publicity about France in a positive way, reflective of
A lot of positive stories about Muslim players as well, because I think it's the most Muslim players to have ever won the World Cup as well, because there's a lot of Muslims in the French team. So there's tons of positives out of it. I'm sure in France there's a lot more coverage of it. Over here, they're obviously going to talk about England, how they did, how positive it was, and they're not going to concentrate on individuals from France. The only one they'll talk about is Mbappe, because he's the exciting talent. Isn't
or Pogba, because he plays for United.
Yeah, that'll be it.
A decade ago, Giroud had just finished playing in the third tier of French football with, there you go, Chris, Istres, Istres, and he scored 14 goals in 33 league games. So in a decade, if you'd have said to him then that we'd be talking about him now, he'd have gone, who are they?
Yeah. He probably still is going, who are they?
Yeah, I didn't want to say, if you'd have said to him then you're going to win the World Cup halfway through that, I realised I'm not going to say that's pointless. Everyone knows that.
Question from Jaden Inc. And this is for you, Mike. Do you think our window has been a success? I haven't been overwhelmed exactly.
I'll be brief because I know this isn't really a transfer show. Yes, I do think it's been a success. We knew that the spending was going to be on a lighter side this winter, this window, that there wasn't going to be a 60, 70, 80 million player. Although if you believe some of the whack jobs out there on Twitter, we're either getting Dembele or Dybala. But I do. And the reason is because of the swiftness in which we brought these players in, the reasonable prices that we brought them in, and the fact that we filled the needs in the areas that we filled the needs in by the end of the World Cup, and in most cases by the beginning of the World Cup. This isn't the summer that I think we ought to be binning. There we go. I had to get one of those in. Binning, players who may have underperformed the last few years under Wenger, so people like Bellerin and people like Xhaka, Mustafi. This is the year we need to actually see whether these guys have what it takes to be on Arsenal. So to replace them and sell them off for nothing and buy players that are 50, 60, 70 million pound players, this isn't the year to do that. This is the year to see what Emery and Caicedo can do with players who are under different levels of motivation, fill in some gaps, try to get back in the top four, and then next summer you can look back and say, would I be underwhelmed with a 50 million net spend? Maybe, but not this summer. I think we've done a great job this summer.
Yeah, fantastic. I'm going to do my quick annoying plug now that everyone in the chat absolutely loves. If you're not following us on Twitter, follow us at the AFC Podcast. If you're not subscribed on YouTube, click the subscribe button, click the bell icon, you'll get notified whenever we go live. Please give us a thumbs up. You're all sat there watching. We've got four thumbs up. What's going on? We've even got thumbs down. I know I'm on here and Jason's not, and that's fair enough for the thumbs down.
There's 88 watching. It's 85 watching and 32 thumbs up. Give it a tickle, gentlemen. You want to.
Yeah, give us a thumbs up. Jason gets very happy when you give him a thumbs up. And we'll do a few more questions and then we'll wrap up because we were trying to stick to an hour, but I knew we wouldn't. Right, one from Mayank. Oh, I'm sorry, I can't say your last name. I tried to do it last time and I butchered it horribly, so I'm not going to do it again. who should be the Monaco goalkeeper before the Qatar World Cup? I think this is to do with, I think it's the last three tournaments. The Monaco goalkeeper has been played in the final and lost every single time.
Subasic?
Yeah. I can't remember who the others were. Argentina. Yeah. It's every single one has been the Monaco goalkeeper, and they've all lost the final.
What's Jordan Pickford there then?
what goalkeeper do you all really hate, and you'd want to see losing a final horribly? any names spring to mind?
De Gea.
De Gea's one. Jennings. That's a good one.
Now that he's reaffiliated with Spurs, great when he was with us, but he went sulking back there, didn't he?
Rene Higuita from Colombia from 25 years ago.
Oh, that's mean. I really don't like the look of De Gea because he looks like a bit of a weirdo with that long neck. And then again, Courtois is the same as well.
I think De Gea long. For being consistently shite in the World Cup but being a pain in the bollocks at United.
Certainly play underneath his level at this World Cup.
Isn't Courtois off to Madrid now?
He's going to Madrid for €5 million.
Because Alisson's going to Liverpool apparently for €62 million.
Well, so that means Butland to Chelsea then, right?
He's not done yet, Alisson. So sorry.
As soon as Alisson goes there and sees Liverpool, he'll be going to Chelsea.
Yeah.
Not much Paris between Knightsbridge and Anfield, I can assure you.
Chelsea may try and sneak in on that transfer move because he's very much a Sarri goalkeeper. But yeah, 35 million euros for Courtois. Quite a steal.
Especially is that all?
Yeah. He's only got a year left on his contract, so yeah.
But the other thing is he only wanted to go to Madrid because his wife and kids live there still.
Yeah, they're still waiting from when he was at Atletico. Yeah,
definitely of that kid as well. I read that.
Yeah. Another one from Jaden Inc. Do you think this was the best World Cup ever, Steve? Is this your best ever World Cup? We'll go along the line.
No, Italia 1990 was.
Fair, Mike.
1990, but this was close. 1990 was better for me in different ways. The group stages in 1990 were really nothing more than just the Roger Milla show. And really, I mean, England's path in the group stages was boring. It wasn't until the knockout that it really got good. But, you know, I go with 1990, but from start to finish, the interest level was better in this one.
Yeah. Danny?
Looking back at it now, I'd say 90, and I really liked 94 because that was the birthplace of MLS, and I know everyone hates MLS, but I like it, and Alexi Lalas was brilliant. But in
worst
when I look
final
back
ever, though.
In 20 years, if you ask me, I will look back at this World Cup and go, wow, the summer was amazing, the weather was amazing, the TV coverage was amazing, you could watch every single game, everything you want from a World Cup, and we've had it for this World Cup. But at the moment, I'd say no, but you know, things are always better when they're in the past, so yeah.
Thunder Road is just said Gooners in USA back in 1990. You could see your feet. That is actually true. I was about 10 stone back then. So I'm literally half the man I've
got a photo of me from the World Cup that year, and I've got the same chair I've got now. And I was about 11 stone, and I've had hair and no beard, and I'm wearing an England kit because I was all about England then. Because Gazza for me was a Geordie and an England player, and that's, for me, that's where it starts. So you don't think of Spurs when you think of Gazza, unless you're laughing when he broke his leg. But yeah, that 1990 was amazing.
1990 was my first World Cup I remember. I remember my uncle being really annoyed by how good Cameroon were. He was extremely upset by
that. It was brilliant, though.
Yeah.
Did they beat or did they tie Argentina in the group? I can't
remember now. They might
be asking. Bloody hell, I can't remember what I had for dinner yesterday.
Yeah. I just remember it was the first tournament I ever saw, so there was a lot of excitement around it.
Well, one of the funniest things about that was Roger Miller allegedly being under 40. and that dancer used to do it the corner flag. Who was the bald-headed Italian guy who won the Golden Boot? He was fucking brilliant.
Oh, the one who went off to Japan.
Yeah. Toto Schilacci.
Sebastian Schilacci.
Toto. He went off to play in Japan after that, and that's made the Japanese league. And then Lineker went there.
Yeah. But this World Cup, but honestly, has been. I mean, it was. I think it's way better than the last two. Like South Africa in particular was dreadful. I think it was awful, maybe even worse by that bloody Vuvuzela thing that was going on. It sounded like a giant
fucking ruined it.
Couldn't stand that. But yeah, it just. I think, like Danny said, with time and perspective, maybe this will become my favourite. I have a special spot for 94 as well because Dunga was one of my favourite ever.
Oh, wow. What a shit manager he turned out to be.
Yeah. Not quite such a good manager, but yeah, I really love watching him play football.
And the return of what should have been the return of Maradona. It was fantastic. And then we realised why Maradona was fantastic in 94. I'd have been fantastic in 94 if I'd taken that much drugs.
Oh, Badger.
And he hasn't slowed down a bit. But the most embarrassing thing of this World Cup, I was thinking either Neymar or Mascherano, but Maradona. I mean, was this photoshopped or were there literally fingerprints in white on the railing in front of him that were like
wouldn't surprise me.
Where was the game that he physically had to be led out, where he had to be carried out because he was off his nut?
It was Maradona Land. Yeah. I mean, that guy is going to die, and it's going to be soon, and no one should be surprised.
Someone tweeted a video of Maradona post-retirement playing in a friendly game or a charity game, and after the game, he scored a goal, and then after the game, someone ran onto the pitch, held
a gave him a line.
White powder on it, and then it was like feeding a horse carrots. He was stuffing white powder in his face.
It was at an all-star game or something like that. He scores a penalty to win it.
Yeah.
And within 10 seconds, he's done a line.
blatantly taking a bag of coke out there and giving it to him. Fucking hell. He's a rock star. No, I'm surprised he's still alive.
he's Pele's going to outlive Maradona, that's for sure.
There's a great story. I think it's Lineker told it, and he said he was playing at some charity event with loads of like the ex sort of international stars, and Maradona was there, and he met him a couple of times, and he said, Maradona, you know when you see the pictures of Ronaldinho and he do the thing where he boot the ball really high up in the air and he'd have a conversation with someone, the ball come that and it just stop on his foot and he wasn't even looking. He said Maradona was doing that, but in between he was dancing, spinning around and talking to people and everything else, dancing the spots of music like he did in all the build up for all the Argentina games. So he was still doing it like in his 50s. He said it's unbelievable. He said no one can do stuff with the ball that he could. He said it doesn't matter how overweight he gets or you know how unfit and healthy.
At least the guy's in good touch. Shape.
Yeah. It's just still unbelievable. So yeah, but, you know, fair enough. As long as he doesn't hurt anyone or whatever, fill your boots, Maradona. That you were amazing for him.
After when he scored that goal in the USA '94, and he came up to the camera and he was almost transforming into another human. He was on so many drugs. You can see his DNA changing as he goes. Yeah, and that was the last time he played because he was told to fuck off after that.
They were going to force him to play for Colombia in that tournament. Yeah. Apparently that fell through.
Oh, dear. Right, last couple of questions and then we're going to wrap up because we have gone over time. One from Nikki Wilson. What do you think about the train set piece at corners? This is the famous, if you're not in England, Glenn Hoddle dubbed this the love train, what England would do when they're in that line.
Sounds hot.
Yeah, and split off.
I'm listening.
Andy's taking notes.
Please explain. By the way, I just want to wedge this in there because I saw it, and it's not going to make the list, but someone asked about what we think for the next World Cup, currently uncapped English Arsenal player. I mean, Maitland-Niles is going to be your star in Qatar 4 years from now. I think
Niles is my shout, and then who? Holding? Has he been capped for the?
Not for the senior team.
Him and Chambers have played for the under whatever they are.
21s. Is
Chambers has played two games for England. Hasn't he?
I think Chambers has already played. The other one I would say has got a chance. It depends whether he's still at Arsenal or not. I don't know. Is Reece Nelson?
The other one is the young blonde-haired lad who played Boreham Wood.
Smith Rowe and Nketiah as well, actually. There's quite a few that have got, you know, there'll be fringes. Maitland-Niles is the most likely, though, I think. But
Do they all have to have a brief, like, hyphenated last names? I mean,
I don't know. It's very strange. We've got all these, you know, posh-sounding names at Arsenal now. At least Danny can pronounce these ones anyway.
It's not that they're posh, it's just that their mum's decided that they're not letting their maiden name go in the bin when they got married.
Modern day life. Right, last couple of questions. So Nikki Wilson, what do you think of the train set piece? Steve, what did you think of that? The way, not just that, but also just to sort of expand on his question, the way Southgate in particular really took advantage, I think, of VAR. I thought he was quite smart in what he did with set pieces. There was a few tricky ones England did, weren't there?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely something they set up and they practiced and they worked on very hard to have in their armoury. And it's a fucking good job they did because they didn't score a bloody goal from open play. And I think that's you know, they made the best of what they had, and you know, set pieces was their big. Their big go-to thing. I think in the next World Cup, of course, or in the Euros, they'll have a playmaker, so it'll be much more different.
Yeah, I do think it was quite smart of him, and I heard a couple of journalists talking about, you know, if you can get some clever set plays in a tournament where it is so condensed and small, you don't have time to adapt for it or to train to even sort of defend against it. In a league season, it's different. You can prepare for those kind of things. Neil Vergela, who was the true golden ball winner of the World Cup? It was given to Modric, wasn't it? I believe. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Personally, I agree with that. I thought Modric was probably the best player. I don't think there was anyone as close.
Conte, you know, I think, got the most interceptions, but...
Varane would be a shout for me.
There was a voting. I mean, the first, second, and third place in the voting were revealed. Mm. And it was Modric, I think Pogba was second, and Griezmann was third.
Okay.
I could have Conte and Pogba mixed up. I'm not sure, but...
Yeah.
But, you know, because it's voted on, apparently, by, I don't know, by journalists.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, I mean, Modric for me, I think, was probably the best player. But it's close. I think there's a few of the French players. I thought Kante was very good throughout. Varane, I thought, was superb. Pavard, I mean, he had one game where he was a little bit out of position, but for someone who's playing at right back and is a centre back.
I actually won $50 off of Schwinn, Danny.
Yeah, you tweeted it.
Did I? Yeah, he had gone for Griezmann. He was so positive it was going to be Griezmann. It was $50 for him if it was Griezmann. Pogba would have been a no bet at all. We would have just split. And anyone else he gave me. I didn't even have to pick Modric specifically, although if I had to, that's who I would have picked. So, and I was the one with, you know, who was drinking that day. So,
yeah, I mean, does anyone think anyone other than Modric deserved it?
No.
Bastian Larsson, come on, Swedish legend. I still have my hopes on. I fell apart when he didn't play.
I mean, if Ronaldo had managed to keep it going for Portugal, he was doing a good job in the group stages anyway. Of showing
one man team, though.
Oh, you can be that old and amazing. It's still incredible.
And then get 133 and then get £100 million move to Juventus. We're all doing something wrong.
I'm very excited to see what he does in Serie A. Right. Yeah, it's going
to be great. Change the way he plays, though. Might have to do a bit of a Messi because he can't be a striker there, can he?
No, but yeah, there were some decent players. Golovin, I thought, for Russia was very good. Cheryshev as well.
Yeah, but the top five people for running the most amount of distance was Russian players. That's not going to be investigated, is it?
I think that whole thing is very overblown. Russia ran less distance than the Australians did at the last World Cup. So, you know. And also, you look at the Spain game, the Russians... They really didn't run that far in the Spain game because they didn't move. They just sat there. The big lad they had up front as well, actually, Zuba, I was quite impressed with him. He was pretty decent. I know it's a bit cliche, but he had very good feet for a big man. But no, I think Modric was a deserved winner. Got another one from Nicky Wilson. We'll leave this as the last one and then we'll do some shout-outs and stuff. Which Scouser will replace Henry on Sky Sports?
Dan, what's his name? Carragher's back, isn't he?
Well, Carragher is back anyway after he's...
Just watch them do something really hideous and they'll bring in fucking an ex-Tottenham player.
Oh, God. We've already got Redknapp, haven't we? I suppose they could bring in Phil. You could have Phil and Gary. You could have both the Nevilles.
I think the Women's FA may be removing him out of the public arena after his appalling mansplaining.
Oh yeah.
During the World Cup, where he completely talked over Alex Scott, and she then really humiliated him about three or four times. I think he could be the first England manager to be beaten up by the women's team. Really do. If you are listening in England, ladies, and you are going to beat up Phil Neville, please put it on fucking YouTube. We'll all pay to watch it.
I tell you who actually Sky could do couldn't do much better than is getting Alex Scott. I thought she was superb. If you weren't in England and you didn't get to see the coverage, she was amazing. She was really, really good, very confident. She does a lot of the Match of the Day early morning stuff now as well.
What's her name? Kelly, the Arsenal player from England. Kelly Smith. She was on our studio show a lot and acquitted herself quite nicely.
What we don't want is the Chelsea manager who's just had a baby because she's like having a devil boy on. You can't understand a bloody word she's saying. I'm from London. But I'd have Amy Lawrence. I want to have having a woman on there, someone who can just amazing like Amy Lawrence. Kelly Cates is already fantastic, so maybe just have her on every single. Just Kelly Cates and Ian Wright on every show, and Amy Lawrence. He couldn't top that. I mean, there's only a 2.5 gooners there.
But yeah, I think I'm all for diversity, and I know some people get upset with that whole thing of you're only doing it like though all those women listed. More than capable when they're all done brilliant jobs.
Because of who they played for, not how they speak, which is bullshit. We don't want that. We want people that are interesting to watch, interesting to listen to, and are not up their own arse because of their entire career. Like Phil Neville should never touch a microphone ever again.
I think for the most part, Sky have done it quite well now. Like Gary Neville was very good at his job. I actually like listening to him. He's quite intelligent. Even Jamie Carragher, when he was on, I know he did the whole spitting thing and whatever else. you know, but he's done his...
That wasn't the best career move.
Yeah, he's done his punishment, you know. Nothing happened to the dad who was filming whilst driving with his daughter in the car. But there you go. But yeah, I quite like to see Alex Scott. I think she'd get more TV coverage. I hope she gets to do more stuff for Arsenal as well. They should definitely... some of the ex-pros they've got.
Is she retired now?
Yeah, she's retired, fully retired now. So I think
she's an Arsenal ambassador.
Yeah, should definitely use those kind of people to their advantage because they're very, very good ambassadors. They talk very well, obviously very presentable and everything else. But she came across brilliantly.
I'm not saying that because they're women. They had that ex-Chelsea one. She was rubbish. That one who got the who had the trouble with the women's England manager.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You mean because he was a bullying racist wanker?
Oh no, not because of that. I don't care about that.
No, he was.
Yeah, he was. But I'm saying that we're not just saying women for the sake of women. Yeah. We had some women in there that I didn't overly. I didn't like the. I said this to Herman. I didn't like what's the Chelsea bloke? The West Ham manager was Slaven Bilic.
I liked Slaven Bilic mainly because the entire time he kept touching Roy Keane. And Roy Keane kept getting more and more annoyed.
I didn't get to watch him. Obviously, I don't get the Sky feed that you guys get, but anything that Slaven Bilic does, I'll watch, including just what he used to do when they were down 3-0, just standing on the sideline looking like he was, you know, 5 minutes from getting killed in a Serbian whatever. But
he's going to ask you for if you've got money for a cup of tea. He just looks dirty.
Did he smoke on air? Like, was he smoking? Like, just like
a quick fax? No, not allowed that over here.
Right, I'm going to call an end to this madness because we've gone way over time. But I'm just going to give a quick shout out to a few people in the box. So, thanks to you, Loki73, Sealor AFC, Majib Ahmed, Phelps, Rudy Raslos, Kieran Paris, Kevin Lebeck, Nikki Wilson, Mr. Boblex, Peter Coulson, Super Cali, Gentile. Oh, God. Who else have I missed? Neil Vega, Jaleel, Sealor,
Michael.
Mr. Chakrabooty's come into play.
Oh, there we go.
Mr. Boblex, check your booty.
So I apologize if we missed anyone. I know Danny did a shout at the beginning of the show as well. Big thank you to everyone who watches later on, whether you're on YouTube or you listen on iTunes or anything else. Again, I know we do the plug every time, but if you can give us a thumbs up, really helps. If you can subscribe, hit the bell icon, really, really helps. Give us a follow on Twitter at the AFC podcast. Check out our Facebook. We're actually using it now. There's a lot of conversation going on there at the moment, Danny.
Yes,
it's quite good as well. Everyone's all chatting together. I've seen Nikki and a few others pop up. Some regulars from YouTube. So yeah, if you want to talk to fellow Gooners, it's a good place to hang out. And obviously we'll post all our links to our shows and everything. Just time now to say thank you to our guests. So I'll say
Before we go, let's remind everybody that on Thursday, Jason, the Welsh Justice Davis, will be hosting a transfer show to discuss the transfer window. Aaron Ramsey, Gazidis, no, he's not leaving, don't be stupid. and all the stuff you've been asking about in the chat box tonight, that will be on Thursday. So make sure you're ready on Thursday. Watch our Twitter feed for Jason to announce when it's going to be live. Get in there with your questions, and I'm sure Jason will be sat there ready and waiting to abuse all of you.
Josh and Carl, I think, are on.
Yeah, we haven't got a set time for it yet, but it'll be sometime around 7:30 to 8 p.m. UK time.
Well, no, Jace is running. It could be midnight by the time he gets his computer. He'll be there trying to wind it up with a handle at the side of it.
But yeah, that will be the rough sort of time for the show, but obviously we'll tweet that out. But if you're already subscribed and you've got the bell icon on, it'll come up straight away when we go live.
We didn't do this for 4.5 years, and then John and started mentioning it. And then we got just over, I think we got 200 YouTube subscriptions in the space of a week once we started mentioning it.
I didn't even know we could do it. Honestly, there's people I'm subscribed to, and I clicked it. I was like, oh, this is handy. I know when a video's up now.
We're just keep looking. Our sixth season, and we're just picking up on letting people know what we do.
I will say thank you, Danny.
Thank you very much for being here, John, and rushing home from work, your bus wanker.
That's all right. Thank you, Steve, for coming on all the way from Poland.
Ah, pleasure. And I haven't rushed home from work, so I haven't been to work.
And a very big thank you to Mike, joining us all the way from the USA. Mike, where can people find you and your wonderful podcast?
And I am at work right now, Steve, so but not getting a tremendous amount done. But we are Gooners in the USA. You can find us on YouTube, on iTunes. We're doing pretty much 50-50 audio and video pods now. don't come and expect serious breakdown of tactics unless maybe we have a guest on that week that's capable of that. We're just looking to have some fun. A lot of your listeners have become our listeners, and we really, really thank you for that. You guys have been great friends to us, and I love coming on and chatting with you blokes.
It's my favorite other Arsenal podcast since Goonosphere no longer do stuff, but they might be back. But we will be doing a special. It'll be Mike and Andy, and then me and probably one other person, definitely one other person from ABW that they're going to pick. And then we're going to do a season preview. And we're also doing one with Same Old Arsenal. We're also doing one with Highbury Heels. And we're also doing one with Soccer Yank Dan's one. I always get his one mixed up. And maybe even one with Giles's one as well. So there you go. We're going to have, we're going to have five of them.
The podcast world is a friendly place. Most
certainly is. We all get on with each other now.
Mostly. Not completely, but mostly.
So, yeah, that's it for us and for the World Cup. I hope you enjoyed all the shows we did. I know I think I was only on this one. I don't think I got onto the others. I wasn't about. But I hope you enjoyed all the different guests we had on. I know we had some people who from outside ABW. So if you enjoyed them and maybe you want to see them back on the main podcast as the season comes on, let us know. Give us a tweet. Tell us what you liked, what you didn't like, all that kind of thing. As Steve already said, transfer show on Thursday. That will be going on every single week. I think they're always going to be on a Thursday building up to the season. And we've also... little secret, we might have a man in Singapore.
Yeah. One and a half. Bird Camp Wonderland Singapore Sling.
Yeah, we might have some reports live. Well, not live, but we might have some reports from Singapore from the tour. If you're sober.
and not just from the stands, from the press mix zone.
Yeah, so so we've hopefully got a little bit of a treat lined up for you guys. So thanks again for watching all the way through the summer. I know it sucks a little bit when the football's not on, but we had the World Cup to see us through. And that's it. Thanks for us. So, Danny, press the button. And don't forget, tune in Thursday.
Bock Havoye.